You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Here are some word associations. Peanut butter, jelly, cat, mouse. What about noise pollution? Garrett Kaiser says that correlation is simplistic, that noise is a lot more than the sound we don't want. In fact, it comes from the things we desire, the things we feel entitled to, and it may be quietly destroying us. How you are affected by noise says a lot about you, your age, your class, and how much political power you have. And yet, when we run away from noise, Mr. Kaiser says, we end up creating more. Garrett Kaiser's The Unwanted Sound of Everything We Want, a book about noise, is published by Public Affairs, and I'm very pleased that it brings him to our show. Hi.
Hi.
How did you become interested in something as arcane as the role noise plays in society?
Well, somewhat by accident, I was researching another subject, and it had something to do with noise, and I was encouraged by my magazine editor at Harper's to look into the subject of noise, and I discovered that it was quite a fascinating subject, that it went beyond just an acoustic phenomenon and touched on lots of different disciplines of study and on lots of different aspects of what it means to be a human being.
And you deal with the personal right off the bat. You admit your biases. You prefer the body over the machine, and you don't like being told what to do.
That is true, and there is an aspect of noise that is going to touch on that bias, because noise is often imposed upon us, just as silence is sometimes imposed upon us.
Yeah, I remember when I moved to the suburbs for a brief time, escaping New York, to some degree sorry that I did, I was disconcerted by the fact that I could hear my pulse when I tried to sleep because it was so quiet. Or the click beetles would keep me up instead of the sounds of sirens. I was much more comfortable with sirens.
Yes.
Is the fact that your wife is a speech pathologist also something that contributed to your interest in noise?
I'm not sure it contributed to my interest in noise, but once I began to explore noise, it contributed to my appreciation of it. She's not only a speech pathologist, but she's a speech pathologist who works with young children and also with children having various disabilities, including children with autism. And so those concerns tended to run on a parallel track with mine when I was working on this book.
Autistic people have a really hard time being in noisy situations.
Yes, they do. Temple Grandin, who may be one of the better known people with autism, writes about how as a child her governess discovered this aversion that she had to noise and would actually keep a supply of blown up balloons on the top of the refrigerator to pop near Temple anytime that she was misbehaving or seemed to be misbehaving. And she said that sound went right through her and was even traumatic.
I know an autistic child who cannot go to restaurants just because the noise is overwhelming. Talk about what you mean by the unwanted sound of everything we want. How can noise be desirable then?
Well, I called the book The Unwanted Sound of Everything We Want because noise is usually defined as unwanted sound. And some would say that's not the best definition for it. Les Blomberg of the Noise Pollution Clearinghouse has said we don't call air pollution unwanted particulates, so why should we call noise unwanted sound? He feels it's overly subjective. But it's usually defined as unwanted sound, and I wanted to link it in the title to its source in many of the things we do want. A primary source of noise is transportation. Most of us want to have access to transportation. And so when we hear a sound and we designate it as a noise, if we pursue that designation, we inevitably come to questions about, well, what do we really want? What are we willing to pay to get it? And where are we getting what we want? at the cost of making other people pay for it.
Well, in some cases, we understand that the noise is inevitable. But in other cases, for example, when somebody blasts a car radio or when somebody is talking very loudly on the street into a cell phone, then we think it's the noise is annoying.
Yes. And in fact, that I mean, one of the interesting things about noise is that it's an objective acoustical phenomenon, as all sound is. But when you call something a noise, there's a subjective component. And that subjective component is often influenced by how you perceive the sound. One of the interesting stats I came up with is that a sound that people perceive as of short duration and as coming from something that is necessary, like, say, the siren of a rescue vehicle, will actually be registered at 10 decibels on average lower. You can, in computing the annoyance, subtract 10 decibels because their sense is this isn't going to last forever and it's necessary. Someone's life depends upon it.
But it's also about whether we're it's something that's serving us or serving somebody else. For example, we can keep our radios up loud, our television sets up loud. We can turn on the dishwasher and it makes a lot of noise, and that doesn't seem to bother us. But if we're hearing it from somebody else, all of those things can be very annoying.
That's right. And one of the factors in noise annoyance is control. And of course, if it's your noise, you have control over when it stops and starts. If it's someone else's noise, you don't. One of the footnotes to add to that observation is that sometimes people will get into a dispute about noise such that the noise is the focus of the dispute. Well, it sounds like noise to you, but it's just music to me. But it's really depends on the situation people are in. So someone's having a party and they say, well, this is fine with me, but you seem to have a problem with it. But if that person having the party heard the same sound when he or she was trying to get to sleep, it would be noise.
Well, it's also a matter of time in the case of a party. If that noise is coming up at 9 o'clock, it's okay. If it's coming up at 12:30, 1 or 2 o'clock, then it's an annoying thing.
Absolutely.
On my way to work today, as I was walking to the subway, I passed a Fresh Direct truck, which had a proudly declared that 100% of all their trucks run on biodiesel fuel. But the truck was making an incredible amount of noise, perhaps because it had an air conditioner going, keeping the food fresh. And without thinking about this segment, I went through the same process. Well, is this the price you have to pay? It's a very loud, annoying sound.
Yes, and your example shows how thinking about a noise, if you want to parse it out, will lead you to other issues. And in the case that you raised, about food, where our food comes from. A lot of the food that we eat now, I think, changes hands an average of 6 times before it hits our plates. That has ecological consequences, and it has consequences in terms of noise.
We invite, by the way, our listeners to call in with examples of their own, what noises may bother them the most, or and have you ever considered complaining to the police if somebody was making a noise? Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And we have a call coming in from Peter from Tarrytown that is kind of interesting along these lines. Hi, Peter. You're on the air.
How you doing? I rode submarines for about 20 years. I've been out of them now almost 30 years. But during that time when I was on board the submarines, there was a constant drone background machinery noise. And some of it at different times could get quite loud. You learn very quickly which ones were the sounds that you were supposed to hear. That meant the ship was running, there were no problems, and which ones could have been a problem. And you filter those things out. And if one of those noise went away, you learn very quickly that, hey, there's something missing here. I'm not hearing something. And you went and looked and saw what it was. Well, now it's been about 30 years since I've been out, and I still find it difficult at night to sleep without some kind of noise going on in the background.
The submarine is sinking.
well, no, it wasn't. Well, we were supposed to sink, but the object was to come back up again.
podcast. And, you know, studies show that people are much better able to tolerate a constant noise than they are able to tolerate intermittent noise. But it's interesting that in Peter's experience made me recall something I read by someone in a prison, and prisons can be very noisy places, who said that when the prison suddenly grew eerily quiet with no apparent explanation, you knew that somebody was going to get hurt.
My guest is Garrett Kaiser. His book, The Unwanted Sound of Everything We Want, a book about noise. It is published by Public Affairs. I know somebody who lived right near the elevated train and told me that when he was a kid, he woke up one night because the train wasn't running because it was a snowstorm, that those noises had become so much a part of his unconscious while he was asleep that, like this man in the submarines, he knew something was wrong.
And even though he was able to sleep during that that noise, a recent study shows that people living next to noisy highways, even if the traffic sound doesn't wake them, still register an elevation in blood pressure, and it's greater if the sound is louder. The example is interesting to me because sometimes I'm asked, what are the loudest things you've ever heard in your studies? One of the loudest things I ever heard was an elevated train in Queens.
Yeah. You say noise is a weak issue because it affects the weak, the poor, the sick, the very old, and the very young. Aren't children bombarded with noise?
Well, they are, and increasingly so. Right now, something like 1 in 8 American children has a noise-induced hearing loss. That's 5 million kids.
Now, that's just from normal stuff, or is that from wearing iPods?
Well, that's partly believed from wearing iPods, but also some kids, and here's where the aspect of noise affecting the weak comes in, because some kids don't have quiet homes. They don't live in apartments that are acoustically insulated, or their schools are located toward noisy transportation routes. And so they have a less share of that form of wealth called quiet than more privileged children have. And it's been demonstrated that the noise not only has certain health effects, but it has some educational effects as well.
The old are more likely to suffer hearing damage because of the length of times that they have been exposed to excessive noise. How does accommodating hearing damage make the world more of a noisy place?
Well,
I mean, because they wind up having to turn things up.
Yes, it
does. We wind up shouting sometimes, yep, just so that people can hear us.
Well, that raises a very good point about noise and noisy societies in that they tend to function like a kind of acoustical arms race. You turn up sound in order to be heard or to have it heard above other sounds, so the noise escalates. Sometimes noisy devices like air conditioners are turned on to drown out sound, and also, as people lose their hearing or have their hearing damaged by the noisy devices, they in turn have to turn up devices louder in order to be heard.
My guest is Garrett Kaiser, who is a contributing editor at Harper's Magazine, the author of 6 books. Actually, is this the 7th?
This is the 6th.
And the 6th is The Unwanted Sound of Everything We Want, a book about noise. It's published by Public Affairs. We will continue our conversation and take more of your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment on our show page at wnyc.org. We're back with Garrett Kaiser, K-E-I-Z-E-R, his book, The Unwanted Sound of Everything We Want, a book about noise. It's published by Public Affairs. We often talk about how noise can destroy hearing, especially if you're putting earbuds in your ear and playing your iPod so loud that not only you hear it, but so does everybody within 5 feet of you hear it. But what about the psychological things, stress hormones and such? How much of an impact does noise really have on our bodies?
Well, that remains a matter of study and some controversy. The Dutch have recently done a study in which they estimate that 700 of their people die every year from noise. That doesn't mean that 700 people hear a noise and keel over, but that the cumulative effect can be tied to 700 deaths. Noise raises blood pressure. Noise seems to interfere with our immune system. Noise, obviously, in some cases, prevents sleep. There's something like 60 million Americans who have varying degrees of sleep disturbance, and that gives rise to a whole other spectrum of health problems. Noise also has been demonstrated in studies of some age now to have an effect on not only physiological and mental health, the performance of functions and that sort of thing, but on what might be called social health, in that it tends to, at least in the studies, reduce altruistic tendencies, that people are less likely to help a stranger in difficulty in a noisy environment.
What about violence? War is very noisy.
Yes, and the link between noise and violence is very old. And, you know, noise itself can even function like a form of violence. But certainly when violence is present and in mechanized warfare, especially so, there's a lot of noise. The hearing loss and trauma that come from noise and come from combat tend to work together. And in community situations, noise can also result in violence. And there are been noise disputes that have ended violently.
One of France's greatest writers of the 20th century, Louis Ferdinand Céline, said that he would not have written if he hadn't developed tinnitus during World War I as a result of all the noise. It destroyed his hearing. He couldn't sleep, and so he started writing his novels during the night.
Yes, and that combat-induced hearing loss is something like 1 in 4 of the soldiers returning from Iraq has it. So it was not a problem that faded away with Céline.
A number of listeners have left comments on our show page complaining that authorities don't take complaints about noise seriously. Is that because there's little they can do about it?
Well, sometimes there's little they can do. There are lots of reasons why that's so. Authorities sometimes feel that noise is a minor problem compared to other problems they might have to deal with, of crime and such, even though noise sometimes can lead to crime. In many places, police forces have not been trained in doing things like reading sound meters. And, of course, it's difficult because neighbor noise, which is one of the most intractable forms of noise, is tied up with lots of other factors. Often someone is making a noise to annoy a neighbor where there's some other dispute going on, or the person hearing the noise registers it as a greater annoyance because of past experiences with that person. I would say, though, that it could also be argued that sometimes authorities don't deal with domestic violence either for many of those same reasons, and they should deal with it.
Dana from Manhattan, you're on the air.
Oh, yes, hi. I have a horrible problem. Motorcycles this time of year, so loud, sometimes in the middle of the night, it'll wake me up, and I feel like I'm under attack, and I just hit the floor, you know, for cover. And it happens a lot. It makes my heart palpitate. I've called the police station. They get angry with you when you call to complain about motorcycle noise. Yet on the block, there's a sign that says if somebody honks their horn, you can get a ticket. And I'm not the only one that has a problem with motorcycle noise. It's horrible. I mean, it's really. So I want to know how I can deal with that because I know I'm getting sick over it. I know I do because it scares me.
And New York has had a long history of trying to control noise, hasn't it, Mr. Kaiser? We had the New York Noise Abatement Commission of 1929, 1932. More recently, the Bloomberg administration has made efforts to curb construction noise. But are there some noises that, like motorcycles, if a car has a faulty muffler, it can get a ticket, can't it?
That's right. And some of the motorcycles, of course, are sporting illegal straight pipes. In other words, in fact, there's a police force in a major American city that's actually riding around with illegal straight pipes on their motorcycles. Motorcyclists have told me that the way that the motorcycle is ridden is also going to affect the noise, that it's possible even to ride a loud bike quietly through residential areas, although this doesn't often happen.
On the other hand, you say noise is the sound of progress. The Industrial Revolution created a lot of noise, didn't it?
It did, and I would rather say that noise has often been associated with progress. Let's face it, any sound, any movement will create sound. And so if you have a dynamic society, it's going to create more sound. But I think we err if we make too easy an association between noise and progress. It depends how we define progress. And noise often arises out of mechanical inefficiency. I mean, if you're running your vacuum cleaner and it suddenly starts making a racket, you don't say, gee, I must be progressing with cleaning my rug. You're thinking something's wrong with the vacuum cleaner.
On the other hand, we don't get any noise from an electric light bulb, but you say the invention of electric light has led to a lot more noise.
I feel that it has, yes, and as counterintuitive as that might sound, because what electric lighting did is it allowed us to colonize the soundscape of the night and to fill the night with the same kind of activities, work-driven, purpose-driven, agenda-driven activities. The night used to be a time for rest and relaxation, as one writer said, for storytelling, sex, sleep, and prayer. And we've, in industrial societies, have really turned the night into an extension of the day.
My guest is Garrett Kaiser. His book, The Unwanted Sound of Everything We Want, a book about noise, published by Public Affairs. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. We go now to Mike from Mahwah, New Jersey. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi there. I have an observation on something which might be not considered noise in some, by a lot of people, but sound. Unwanted sound, even at moderate levels, can be considered noise. And I'm specifically referring to music in restaurants and other public places. I never understood why the managers or owners or designers of restaurants thought it would be a good thing to have music, which is often just taken off of the right out of the radio, along with commercials and various other stuff. In the general area, and particularly when they pipe it into the bathrooms, for goodness sake.
Let me go a little further with this. It seems to me that if a restaurant noise level is directly connected to the demographic that it is appealing to, and the younger the demographic, the louder the noise. Do you think that's true?
I think that it may be true, although I know younger people who prefer a quieter restaurant. For me, the dividing line is whether the music is interfering with conversation, which it will if it's turned very loud, and it will if people need to talk all the more loudly in order to converse above the music.
A listener from Prospect Heights left a comment on our show page. I've lived in Prospect Heights in Brooklyn for a long time. Vanderbilt Avenue has become a restaurant row. Generally, that's fine. The diversity of options and busyness, even though much of it is a significant symbol of gentrification, is lovely. However, the addition of bars with outdoor areas has become a major disruption.
Yes. People,
because now the front is open. There are tables on the street, and we're getting all of that noise. And it's like a Charles Ives work. Each one is competing.
Yes, it's competing, and I guess one has to look at what values are competing or what rights are competing. The right to enjoy entertainment at an outdoor bar versus the right of a child to sleep in an adjoining apartment. But there have been a number of technical devices made to address this problem. At one trade show, I saw a device that allows a bar owner to monitor the noise he's projecting into a neighborhood without even leaving the bar. Because many bar owners, they want to pack the house, they want to make a living like the rest of us do, but they also want to keep their licenses. And there are devices that can help them do that.
Elizabeth from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I was wondering whether the author has seen any studies on the cross-cultural impact of noise. Having lived abroad and traveled internationally, I've noticed a lot of cultures seem quite comfortable in noise and almost disturbed by the absence of noise. So I was wondering if he has any comments about this or whether there had been any studies he's come across looking at the health implications, different effects of noise based on the different cultures.
It's a good question, and certainly different cultures seem to evince different levels of tolerance for certain kinds of noise. Some have suggested that warmer outdoor cultures where people are on the street will tolerate a louder speaking voice than indoor cultures in closer and colder climates where people are in closer proximity for most of the year. But I was glad in your question to hear you raise the issue of health concerns because, of course, a human body is a human body, and regardless of your cultural tolerance for noise, it can still have physiological effects and effects on your hearing. One of the most interesting statements I heard about cross-cultural attitudes toward noise was from a man in Great Britain who had visited Istanbul, and he said it was a loud city where he was, but he still had the sense that the street belonged to the people, which meant that no one with one loud device would be tolerated to take over that whole acoustical area.
The ugly American syndrome we have a reputation for being noisier than most. Do you think that's true?
I think that we do. And even though in a gathering in a community, Americans might not seem to be louder and perhaps might seem to be even quieter than people in a community in another culture, because we are a dominant culture and a technical culture and exporting culture and some would say a warlike culture, we are spreading noise around the world, both literal acoustic noise and, if you want to make it a figure of speech, the overpowering noise of American culture, which drowns out the sounds of indigenous cultures so that every place you go, the music sounds like our music, the advertisements are our advertisements, and the speakers are our speakers.
Although heavy metal is not as popular today as it was in the past.
No.
David from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. Am I on?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'd like to share a personal story with you. I'm a professional cellist, and for many years I had an ongoing dispute with my downstairs neighbor over whether or not my practicing constituted noise. And so it just goes to illustrate the subjective nature of whether something is noise or not.
Were you playing scales or were you playing Bach?
Well, sometimes it was scales that led eventually to Bach, you know. And I tried to keep the practicing down in hours that, you know, people before six. But oftentimes when you're, you know, in crunch time preparing for a concert, I would need to go until 8 or 9. And the interesting thing about it was that several other neighbors would stop me in the hallway and thank me for playing music, and they would stop by and listen outside my door. However, this one neighbor found it troublesome to the point where she eventually moved out of the building. And so going along the lines of you know, what is the price to pay for what some people might consider noise? If you follow the tread, obviously, you know, to have proficient musicians in this world, which everyone would agree is something that is desirable, you know, those musicians need to practice every day a certain amount of hours, and that could be troublesome to their neighbors. in dealing with this, she had made several complaints to the landlord, and I was receiving threatening email letters from the from my landlord, and I eventually did some research online, and there have been cases.
Well, let's get Garrett Kaiser in on this, okay? Garrett, I'm sure this is not a unique situation.
Not at all, and in fact,
one person's beautiful music is the next person's noise.
Just as one person's treasure is sometimes another person's trash, but one person's dumpster of dead rats is usually another person's dumpster of dead rats. I couldn't agree with David more that we want professional musicians in the world, and professional musicians have to practice. I would only add that that includes the budding professional musician who is 6 years old and needs to sleep at night so he doesn't fall asleep in band the next day. And so I would say that while there's some subjective difference in the way that neighbors might react to a musician practicing, it's not entirely subjective in the sense of physical needs we all have. One of the factors in noise annoyance seems to be lack of reciprocity. In other words, you can do this to my soundscape, but what am I doing to yours? Which is why in an apartment full of practicing musicians, you'd probably arrive at some kind of peaceful coexistence where you might not with one musician and some others.
Well, we keep on talking about the city as a place of noise, but a couple of listeners who live in the suburbs have mentioned that the sounds of landscaping are serious noise problems there.
Increasingly so. Or at least they've been noise issues for a while, and they increase as people get bigger lawns, as they have less leisure time. So they use devices or they hire lawn services with loud devices. And in some cases, this has been linked, as noise disputes often are, with non-acoustical sociological factors, so that in the Southwest and the far west, it's been alleged by some folks that complaints about leaf blowers, for instance, are tied in with anti-Hispanic prejudice, something that I at first was skeptical about until I began to talk to more people, and I heard complaints about leaf blowers that struck me as tied in with anti-Hispanic prejudice.
Garrett Kaiser's essays and poems have appeared in the Los Angeles Times, Mother Jones, The New Yorker, The Best American Essays, The Best American Poetry. He's the author of 6 books, and the most recent one is the one we've been discussing, The Unwanted Sound of Everything We Want, a book about noise. It's published by Public Affairs. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.